And let's head straight to the Alliance leader, Naomi Long. You must have been up a long, long night, Naomi, and what a night for your party. Happy birthday, by the way.
Yeah, well, thank you, Stephen. It's my birthday, and I have to say that Stephen Farry has probably delivered one of the best birthday presents I've ever had, because I'm absolutely elated for him. The fact that he is the MP for North Down, I think, is an incredible achievement. I'm delighted for Stephen, and I'm delighted for the people of North Down, because I think in him they'll have found a really top-quality, first-class MP, so I'm absolutely thrilled. And it is the end of a long night, because I haven't actually been to bed yet, so it's been an incredible night, Stephen, but I think one that has given us a lot of food for thought, because whatever about elections, the winners, the losers, and we've all been as politicians in both of those situations at different times, there are real messages that are coming from this election. I think the first message is that people in Northern Ireland want to see Stormont back up and running. They've endorsed those parties that have said that needs to happen and needs to happen quickly.
Well, all the parties are saying they want to see Stormont up and running.
Well, some of us are saying it with a little more, focus on how than others. Others have said they want to see it up and running, but have done very little in terms of delivering where they could to actually make that happen. And I think that the public are saying very clearly that the idea that we can go on the way we are is not sustainable. Sinn Féin and the DUP didn't have a great night last night, and I think that that message to them is you've got to get back to Stormont, and hopefully by Monday they will have licked their wounds and we'll be in a position where they're ready to do that.
Do you know what, Naomi? I don't know. Well, if you were Sinn Féin or the DUP, would you want to go into an election anytime soon, given what the electorate's just told them?
Quite. And if they don't, then they need to get Stormont back up and running before the 13th of January, or an election is inevitable. So if I were in either of their shoes, I would be very keen to see the Assembly up and running. And I mean, I could be partisan about it and say, yep, bring on another Assembly election. We're ready for it. We have had a good night. But at the end of the day, I don't believe that another election is what the people of Northern Ireland want. They want delivery. They've sent the message. They've told us what they want us to do. They want us to get a grip on health. They want us to get a grip on education, on infrastructure, on doing the job that they elected us to do back in 2017, and we haven't been able to do since. And I think we really now need to stop the talks and the going around in circles. If there is a will to see the Assembly restored, it can be done, and it must be done. And, you know, I understand all of the kind of sensitivities around what has to happen in order to make this happen. But the reality is that for unionism, the Assembly is absolutely essential. They have got to find some kind of ground in Northern Ireland where they actually can have influence, because they have lost that at Westminster. And they had that for a long time, and that distracted in some ways from doing the deal that was needed to be done in the Assembly. And to some degree, Sinn Féin were coasting on the idea that they could just keep driving for United Ireland and it wouldn't matter what else happened. But actually, the public are saying very clearly, particularly with Call Me Swood's victory in Foyle, actually, that's fine, but we want you to be back in the Assembly doing the job. So I think there's a real challenge to both of the main parties. Sort out your differences and start to deliver.
There's also a real challenge for your party, and indeed Stephen Farry, because in his victory speech, Stephen said, quote, voters had sent out a clear message that North Down wanted to remain in the EU. Surely he needs to move on from that. The Prime Minister has got such a resounding, phenomenal result compared to how some people were speculating it could have been, that maybe Stephen Farry needs to stop all this stuff, that there's no such thing as a good or sensible Brexit, and all forms of Brexit are damaging for Britain. It's over, Naomi. The Brexit discussion is gone.
Well, the truth of the matter is that Stephen is absolutely right. The people of North Down do want to remain. The people of Northern Ireland do want to remain.
And they're coming out, so get on with it.
Well, let me finish. That is the resounding message of the election in Northern Ireland. But what we need to do now is have the reality check that you've referred to. We're now in a situation where, having had the opportunity to influence two successive UK governments, the DUP failed to do that in the best interest of Northern Ireland, because they rejected softer Brexits that were available and went for a hard Brexit. Now we have a Prime Minister who no longer cares or needs the DUP to be able to deliver the hardest Brexit that he wants to deliver. And so our options are limited. What I believe is important now is that we set aside the Leave Remain divisions and we actually get together, DUP, Sinn Féin, the rest of us, all of us together, and actually find a way forward that we can say with a unified voice, because it's clear that where people have definitely moved in this election is towards the centre of politics, that we actually work together and say to Boris Johnson, OK, you have the power to deliver your Brexit. You've got that mandate from the people of England and the people of Wales. But you have a major problem facing you now in Scotland with the SNP and in Northern Ireland in terms of the clear concerns that we have. You need to listen to our voice, one voice, not three,
he doesn't
four,
need
five
to
voices.
Listen no. to Northern let Ireland, given the mandate
Stephen.
He has. He doesn't let need
finish,
to listen.
Stephen. Let me finish, Stephen. You need to listen to the clear voice of the people of Northern Ireland, unless you want to be the Prime Minister, the Conservative and Unionist Prime Minister, who presides over the breakup of the UK. Because if Boris Johnson chooses to use his mandate, the huge mandate that he has, to pursue a no deal or a hard Brexit, then it is inevitable that Scotland will push for a second referendum on independence. And it is almost inevitable that there will be a push for an Irish unity referendum. Now, I think that Boris Johnson, despite everything else that is said about him, ultimately is a pragmatist. He wants to be somebody who goes down in history as having delivered not just Brexit, but actually delivered more than Brexit. And this is an opportunity, but only if everyone in Northern Ireland is singing off the same hymn sheet. And so whatever the results of last night, whatever our individual party ups and downs and all the rest of it, we have got to focus on what is best for the people of Northern Ireland, for our businesses, for the Good Friday Agreement and for our stability. That has got to be number one this morning. It's got to be there for every single party, and we have got to find a way, despite all of our differences, to get the Assembly up and running and to find a single message that we can take into Westminster and that we can take to Boris Johnson to say, look, you have the power to either make this work for everybody or to be a destructive force in your own country. And I think that that message can still influence the outcome, but not if all parties are in different directions.
May I let you get to bed? Thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you. 030 30 80 55 55. We have a panel of experts in the studio, but we have even better experts at home this morning, with all due respect to them. Jenny in Belfast. Good morning, Jenny.
Well, Stephen, I think the DUP has completely blown it, haven't they? And I really hope that the DUP, and actually to a degree Sinn Féin as well, drop the sheer arrogant attitude that they both have, that they'll both be in power forever. Because like Naomi said, you know, the people are speaking. We've had enough. And what I would ask all of them, the DUP, I want you to drop all this radical religious rubbish. I want you to be all-inclusive. I want you to talk to Sinn Féin about an Irish Act, because it's just a load of rubbish. The whole country has it. Europe has it. We want to be progressive with everybody else. So get back to Stormont and do the job that matters.
I will point out to you, Jenny, that it wasn't all bad news for the DUP. For example, Gregory Campbell, he had a resounding success. Sammy Wilson did well. Carla Lockhart won, retained the seat for the DUP. Ian Paisley, now his majority was cut from 20,643 to 12,000, but he won a seat.
Yeah, they have got seats, and of course they were going to get seats. And, you know, for me, myself, you know, I think a Corbyn government for Northern Ireland would have been the worst thing. A referendum for us would have just been the worst thing economically for the whole of the UK. And, you know,
So what's your message? What's your message to the politicians this morning?
Get back to Stormont. And Sinn Féin you know, you drop it as well. Get back to Stormont and get this place up and running again.
Get back to Stormont to start fighting with themselves again.
No, no more fighting. You know, listen to Naomi. You know, people just want to crack on. We want to move on.
Okay.
We're not thinking, you know, orange, yellow and green or whatever it is. Personally, myself, I consider myself British and Irish. You know, and why can I not be both things? And I just want this place to work, you know, our infrastructure. And whatever people say about Boris, you know, I wouldn't be his greatest fan, but he's at least he's positive. And like you said, Stephen, we are where we are. Brexit is happening. So let's make the best of it.
Okay.
And make the best of it.
Jenny, thank you very much. 03030 80 55 55, our political core, Enna McClafferty, waiting to speak to us this morning. What's the local message from this election, Enna?
Well, I think the local message is quite clear, Stephen, because while many of the parties like to frame this particular election around Brexit, I think the message came across loud and clear on the doorstep for many of the parties that Stormont, the lack of local accountable government, the fact that we had a health crisis, we had nurses on a picket line, and yet all our politicians were not doing their job, I think that's what hit home most, and I think that's what caused the message to be sent to the big two parties. And while those in the DUP, of course, will point to the fact that they lost two seats because they were up against a pact, they were up against a pro-Remain alliance in those two constituencies in South Belfast and North Belfast, they will not disguise the fact that the percentage share of the vote was down over 5%, and Sinn Féin's percentage share of the vote was down over 6%. So it is pretty clear that a message was sent to the big two parties when it comes to the fact that we don't have Stormont. And don't be surprised, Stephen, if you see those parties now, if you like, redoubling their efforts to try and crack this particular not to ensure that we do have accountable government in the not too distant future.
And Geoffrey Donaldson had an opportunity on Good Morning Ulster today with Declan to send out a ringing endorsement, because he knows that people will now be asking questions about Arlene Foster given these results, and he did not send that ringing endorsement. The party will have to reflect, is what he said.
Yeah, that was an interesting line, Stephen.
A huge line.
It was, and it's perhaps not surprising, because having just, I suppose, lost one of their political big hitters, their brains, if you like, behind their Brexit strategy at Westminster, they would like to, I suppose, take a bit of time before rushing another leader out the door. But the fact that Geoffrey Donaldson couldn't say that this morning, couldn't say it is time to reflect, to rally round perhaps Arlene Foster and to see where the party is going to go next is significant, Stephen. It can't be underestimated.
And thank you very much. Alex Kane's in the studio with us. Maria Cahill's here, as is Professor John Tong. Morning, John. Morning, Maria.
Good morning.
Morning, morning. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Stephen.
Is Arlene Foster in trouble?
Yes, I think she's in trouble. When I was at the count last night in the Titanic Centre, I spoke to quite a few DUP who were there, advisors and ordinary members and canvassers and so on. And they all, for the first unbidden, just coming, just chatting, they were the ones who said to me, what do you think of Arlene? I mean, is it a big hit for her? Can she survive? Can she take much more of this? And when parties do that, particularly to people like me, Stephen, writing columns and doing commentary like this, I know that it's an issue they're thinking about. And I wasn't at all surprised when Geoffrey was telling Enda that he wouldn't. You know, he couldn't give that commitment. He couldn't give that backing to her.
Do you think Sir Geoffrey wants the job?
He would be one of the obvious choices, I think, for the job. But whether Geoffrey is not a man who leads coups, but I think he's in a position where if people came to him and said, this is the moment, Geoffrey, we need a change. And Geoffrey is always seen as more emollient. I've known him for 30 years. He's a guy who's easy to talk to, who likes to talk, who's able to bring people together in the most unexpected circumstances and get them to talk to each other. And I think at this stage, I don't think she's going to be pushed over the weekend, Stephen, but I think, yes, there will now be very serious conversations about her leadership.
I agree. Let's face it, with the grievous blow to the DUP of Nigel Dodds being unseated, Geoffrey Donaldson was going to be the Westminster leader anyway. So it's a question of whether you still have this job split or whether you have a single unified leader. Because remember, Nigel Dodds always said in the devolution era, you can't leave the DUP from Westminster anymore. But as devolution is not in place, although it may be coming back, there's a case for saying, well, you know, there's no power base in Belfast. So therefore, let's have a unified leader, Geoffrey Donaldson. The question is, though, how does the DUP do that without it looking ugly? You know, how do you manufacture this coup? And I think that's tricky. You know, there was that school of thought that Arlene Foster might depart on the basis of the RHI report, and we still haven't got a date as to when that would come. But I think the DUP would want a more dignified departure than having to resign on the back of an RHI report.
Is there any sign that Northern Irish politics is changing? Can we read into anything from this?
Yeah, first of all, the first thing that's changing is the demographics. I agreed with Arlene Foster last night when she talked about the demise of Nigel Dodds in North Belfast being a consequence of demographics. People said that's sectarian, but it's the reality. That's the first thing. The second thing is Alliance is finally tapping into that big percentage of Northern Ireland's electorate who say they are neither unionist nor nationalist. Alliance's time has finally come because they're finally getting that vote out and getting it to vote for Alliance. So I think those are the big two changes. The third big take from last night is the debate over abstention. It's not a big issue within Sinn Féin at the moment. There's no big push to take seats, but it's bound to rear its head again, given the size. This was one that really surprised me last night, the sheer scale of Colm Eastwood's victory in Foyle. You know, it will reawaken the debate as to whether Sinn Féin, whether there's a case for ending abstention. But I don't see it because you need a two-thirds majority and it would split Sinn Féin.
Maria, the SLP are back.
Well, it looks like it, yeah. I think it's been a phenomenal result for both Colm and Clare. I think the figures for Clare show that she would have taken that seat without a pact. You know, it's a 9,000 plus majority. She didn't need one.
Clare Hannah.
Clare Hannah, certainly, yes. So I think in that sense, they maybe have cut their own nose off despite their face, potentially for an assembly election in North Belfast the next time. That seat looks like it's going to be very, very hard to hold on to. Now, that comes with a health warning because Nicola Mallon obviously has a huge support in that constituency in terms of the hard work ethic that she has. But I think that assembly seat may well go Alliance's direction the next time. So while there are phenomenal results and like you couldn't possibly take away from the very good judgment that they've had in terms of getting out that vote, I think the decision around the pact probably was a little premature.
You were urging people not to vote for John Finucane. They didn't listen to you. That's a huge win for Sinn Féin.
Well, look, I knew that his vote was going to be big. I don't think anybody predicted a 2,000 majority, and I think that John is right on that. The demographics have favoured him in that. But I also see that the Alliance Party's vote is up in that area as well. So, you know, I think people who potentially maybe didn't want to vote for John Finucane went in the Alliance Party's direction, which is the message that I had actually said. You know, if you want to vote for a Remain candidate who will take their seat, because there were only three candidates there, that probably is your best bet.
John, we now have more nationalist MPs than unionists for the first time ever.
Yeah, it's demoralising for unionism, and it does show the change in demographics. Once upon a time, it's only half a generation ago, if you'd said that unionist MPs going to Westminster from Northern Ireland would be a minority, people would have said, you're mad. That just shows how Northern Ireland is changing. And I don't see that position as recoverable. I don't see how it is going to change. And obviously that increases the pressure for a border poll. Not that a border poll is imminent. Let's face it, the real constitutional pressure at the moment is in Scotland, given yesterday's results. But the fact is that the nature of the Boris Brexit, which sets up to some extent an economic United Ireland, means that inevitably there are constitutional questions attached to that which are not going to disappear. And so the pressure will be ever more for a border poll.
03030 80 55 55. Robert and Carrick Fergus, Fran, North Belfast, John and Peter, and lots of you calling us this morning. Peter, good morning to you.
Well, I'd like to ask two questions. I'd like to ask Cahill.
Maria,
I couldn't remember her first name, her name. I'd like to ask her how she can square where Colm Eastwood and Derry stroke Londonderry was going on, you need representation in Westminster, yet he's still in North Belfast, decided to go for somebody, wasn't go to Westminster. And you're right about so many niceness MPs. But they're not really there, because they're only the two going. So between Sinn Féin, or between SDLP and the DUP, there'd be 10. So I'd like to ask, and my second question is, what is she going to do when Boris Johnson's in here and he decides to bring in all the welfare reforms that he's going to do in England? Where you only, instead of having 16 or 18 MPs, you're only going to have 10. Tell me, only 10 people complain here when they're losing money. You know what I mean?
Well, how you doing? I don't know if you missed it, but I resigned from the SDLP over the pact and the abstentionist argument, so I don't have to square anything. That's a thing for Colm to square in terms of how you know, his message obviously resonated in Foyle. You know, it didn't resonate in North Belfast in terms of where that vote has gone. I think it's gone in the Alliance Party's direction. But look, you'll get no argument from me over the abstention argument at all.
Alex Kane, where a lot of the conversation, I reckon, over the coming days and weeks will go is this notion that, you know, John described it, and it's open for interpretation, this economic United Ireland and Boris's deal and a border down the Irish Sea and how loyalists and unions are going to react to that if there is no unionist power base here anymore to stop Boris in his tracks.
Well, I think that is a key question at this point. Well, two things I think are important, Stephen. Boris's deal is not a done deal in the sense that it cannot be changed. It has to be taken through Parliament. And oddly enough, I think, and it's something Naomi touched upon as well, Boris is safe now. He's got a majority. He doesn't have to fear any of his little groups. He's also a man, and it's the old historian in him. He does value the United Kingdom. No Prime Minister wants to give away part of his own country. I think he will be more measured. I think he will listen. I think he will try and find ways of appealing to the Scottish and to the Northerners to try and find, to see if there are ways. And talking to the Irish government and the European Union, look, we have a problem. Can we solve it? I think that's all in play. So my advice to the unionists and some elements of loyalism, don't get too carried away right now, because it's worth bearing in mind, Stephen, if for the third election in a row, we have had sections of loyalism and unionism attacking the Alliance Party as a pan-nationalist party. For the third election in a row, the Alliance Party has put on votes, because it's quite clear that the elements, there are significant elements within unionism, call them small u, soft u, whatever you like, significant elements of you, who John says is an alliance vote which is not nationalist, not unionist, that's fine, but there's also an element of alliance which is pro-union, and there's no difficulty with the Alliance Party's pro-union. So I just think, while loyalists and some unionists are examining how to deal with what could some interpret as an existential threat to the union, don't assume that the Alliance Party is the main enemy.
I think Alex is right on that. But just to come back to the Boris Johnson thing, I mean, I do think he does have to be much more nuanced than what Naomi is saying in terms of here. For one reason, in the sense that he needs a friend in the Irish government when he comes to negotiate the trade deals in terms of whatever type of Brexit he is looking for. Where that may become a problem is that this result for Boris Johnson probably will have a knock-on effect on the Irish government and whether the Taoiseach decides to go to the park and call an election. My own hunch on this is that there may well be an election possibly around the 7th of February. If that happens and that result is upset, that could also have an effect on potentially who the British Prime Minister puts in here as a Secretary of State.
Here's Patrick in Belfast. Morning, Patrick.
Morning, Stephen. Just making a quick point there. Just, it's a terrific day for North Belfast, and you know, representation of the new demographic that there is in North Belfast. You know, great day for nationalism across the board. You know, especially, you know, John Finucane getting in, nationalist Lord Moore and MP now as well. But it shows you that there is a growing interest in nationalism, and you know, especially hopefully now this would represent the Irish language, my own language, in North Belfast as well. You know, you look across the board, it shows you that, you know, the whole idea of the union struggling across the board, and it's great to see, you know.
Well, the union is struggling, but if it came to a border poll tomorrow, there's one held tomorrow, I think that there would be a vote to remain within the union, so nationalists have still got a lot of work to do. In terms of the changing nature of Northern Ireland as well, we shouldn't get carried away. It's worth remembering that 83% of the MPs who go to Westminster from Northern Ireland on Monday or whenever Parliament resumes will be DUP or Sinn Féin. The DUP is still numerically the largest number of MPs. So we shouldn't get totally carried away with what happened. That's not to underplay some of the drama of what has gone on.
Will they want the DUP and Sinn Féin, will they want to go marching into local elections anytime soon, John?
Well, I don't think they'll have a choice, because I think Julian Smith's patience, he's not going to be like his predecessor. I think if there's no talks, if there's no breakthrough in these talks, he'll call elections. What else can he do? Direct rule is the only other option, and he clearly doesn't want to go down on the direct rule option. You know, if there was an Irish Language Act, if the DUP could now take a look and say, look, we've no power at Westminster anymore. All 18 Northern Ireland MPs, let's be honest about this, are out of the game at Westminster. Whether you're seven Sinn Féin abstentionists or whether you're the 11 participants, they're not going to have much power or influence. So the focus returns to Belfast. You get the game back on. There'll be a fresh set of elections. And the DUP, to get the show back on, will somehow have to go through the internal torture of agreeing some form of Irish Language Act, even though it won't be called that.
But does this not make it, does this election result that we've seen last night stroke today, does it not make it more difficult for the DUP to accept an Irish Language Act? Because some would say, look, they've suffered the humiliation of their Westminster leader, Nigel Dodds, he's gone. John Finucane's win there is iconically significant, isn't it? And if they were then to be defeated, those words that some will level at them, if they accept an Irish Language Act, something that Arlene Foster said she would not do, my goodness, what a dreadful year for them.
It's far from ideal.
How can they sell that?
Absolutely. It's far from ideal, but the alternative is even bleaker, where the only DUP power base would be in local councils. That's a pretty bleak vista. You're out of power for another generation. So what's the alternative? You want a local power base, one that could, given that some powers will be repatriated to a working Stormont in terms of EU withdrawal, you could have some local consent mechanisms over those powers. So the only route to power for the DUP now is via Stormont, although it will be, I accept, a bitter pill to swallow.
And Alex Kane, at the beginning of this programme, some of our callers, and indeed I've been saying, look, can Arlene Foster survive this? But what about the people behind Arlene Foster, the strategists, the Timothy Johnsons of this world, the big thinkers, the special advisers? Will they be in trouble or are they untouchable?
Well, they're not untouchable, and I think when the RHI report comes out, that may, you know, nail a few, because certainly Sam McBride's book has spoken of their influence and power, but the RHI report itself will go into, I think, very considerable detail and make reforms, and that may put pressure. But just very quickly on John's point on this thing about whether the DUP want an election, I'm not sure they do. I don't think the UUP either. If you look at the Alliance vote, which is now sort of 18 to 20%, you have an election now with the Alliance continuing this surge, and you have the possibility that the UUP could lose 2 to 3 seats. That brings the guy from 50 non-unionists up to 53. The DUP in places like Strangford and North Down, Stephen, where the Alliance got, 54%, they could lose seats there. The DUP at this moment will not want to run into an election.
03030 80 55 55. John, I know you need to go. Thank you very much indeed, sir. Nice to see you as always. We'll take the news at 9:32.
Now at 9:32, the news from the BBC.
All 18 seats have now been declared in Northern Ireland, and for the first time, nationalist MPs outnumber unionists. The DUP lost their deputy leader, Nigel Dodds, who was beaten by Sinn Féin in North Belfast. In Foyle, SDLP leader Colm Eastwood regained the seat he lost to Sinn Féin 2 years ago, and his party colleague Claire Hanna took South Belfast. In North Down, Alliance's Stephen Farry was elected to replace Lady Herman. Nationally, the Conservatives have secured a resounding election victory, winning their biggest Commons majority since the 1980s. Boris Johnson will lead a government with a majority of at least 75, following a night in which the Tories took seat after seat from Labour in areas of Northern England, the Midlands and Wales, which backed Brexit in 2016. Jeremy Corbyn said he would not lead the party at another election, describing the result as very disappointing. The Lib Dems' Jo Swinson resigned after she lost her seat to the SNP. That's all for now. More from me at 10.
Anne-Marie, thank you. John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Morning, Steve. Well, Steve, the last disconnection was some things. Stupid, just call me, really, Steve.
John, we'll try to get your phone fixed, mate. We'll try to get it fixed. Robert. Morning, Robert.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I heard Naomi on earlier on saying, right, it's time to forget about Leave and Remain. If I had forgot about that 3.5 years ago, instead of trying to get Brexit stopped altogether, they wouldn't have got the worst result they would have been expecting of Boris Johnson getting the biggest majority in a long, long time over in Westminster. But the point we'd like to make, too, is when is the unionists going to wise up and get one party to vote behind? A lot of unionists were duped into voting for Alliance because they were told they were going to stop Brexit, which was never going to happen. And now I hope they get behind one unionist party and one unionist leader. I mean, John Finucane got North Belfast off a man who represented the whole community. The first thing John Finucane done as an MP last night was come on and tell a lie in his speech.
Well, obviously, John Finucane. Obviously, John Finucane. No, I'm not going to let you finish. I'm not going to let you finish because obviously, John Finucane would reject that. And we have no evidence that Mr. Finucane did any such thing. Let's go back to John in Belfast. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen.
Go ahead, John.
Just watch this election. How stupid was Cummings? We'd feel. He stood aside for Sinn Féin in North Belfast. A week later, 2 weeks later, what happened in Derry? They put the letters out for him. The letters went out against Callum Eastwood. And we had Miss Brexit, Miss Hannah, who was marching the storm out, or marching the Westminster to stop Brexit. All these parties had teamed up anti-Brexit. You know what Boris is going to do now? Pick the fingers out of them and say bye-bye. Did you ever hear the old saying, Stephen? Shut the door off the horse that pulled it.
Maria?
Well, just in relation to the letters, there's no evidence that Sinn Féin actually did put those letters out. So I think that's the first thing, you know.
Absolutely.
But it was a tactic that was used that wasn't acceptable in any way whatsoever. Made a number of allegations which just weren't true, and I think it actually probably helped Colm Eastwood. I think people in Derry were
unfair on Sinn Féin to suggest that in the absence of any evidence.
But I think people in the area were absolutely disgusted. I mean, I was talking to people from Culmore right through to the Waterside up there, and it was clear that his vote was certainly a strong vote, but I don't think anybody saw that majority coming. It was a phenomenal result for him, you know. In terms of the march into Westminster to stop Brexit, you know, Clare ran a very, very positive, inclusive campaign. I think she deserved to take that seat. I think she had huge energy around it. And in fact, if there was a template in how you should run a campaign in elections, that was it. She pulled in people from across every party going, and she was rewarded with the majority. She will be there and will be a voice, no matter what issue, you know. At least she will take her seat and go and be there, unlike North Belfast, where that MP won't go into Westminster and use his voice ineffectively, you know, in one of the most underprivileged areas in North Belfast. I think it's very unfair, but the people have voted there, you know. I accept the result entirely, you know.
They didn't call it a pact, but will the perceived pact with Sinn Féin have any impact on the party?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think that it has had an impact in some of the other areas. So I was just notionally looking at figures. I think Upper Ban is going to be a struggle for them to take an Assembly seat the next time round. I think North Belfast is going to be very hard to take an Assembly seat. Their vote has basically collapsed in Lagan Valley. But I think the factor in that is that Pat Catney didn't stand this time round. They have increased. They're up 4.8 in West Tyrone, for example. You know, but in terms of looking at Assembly seats, I don't think any party is going to be looking, with the exception of the Alliance Party, for an election anytime soon. First of all, they're knackered. You know, it would be another election just on the back of another one of another one. Secondly, they're not all very wealthy parties. It takes a lot of resources and energy and commitment and volunteers. And third,
well, that means a deal has to be done.
Absolutely. I think we're at the point now where people are running out of road here. Again, it depends on who Boris Johnson appoints. I mean, if he sends Julian Smith back, I think that the likelihood of Stormont being up and running before the necessity for an election will happen. But, you know, he may gamble that he doesn't want someone who, Julian Smith was a Remainer in Cabinet because of the majority that he has. So he may well decide to clear out his Cabinet and put people in that will absolutely be leave.
Derek and Bangor next. Morning, Derek.
Stephen, how you doing?
Morning, go ahead.
Yep. Stephen, I'd just like to say a lot of this with Nigel Dodds, not the SDLP, Sinn Féin and the Democratic Unionist, their feelings is due to our younger generation and the power of Facebook. If you read some of the things on Facebook about the younger ones, they were just so sick of orange and green and so sick of people having their personal views on religion and things, instead of thinking more for the country. That's all I have to say.
Do you think there's anything in that, Alex?
I'm not sure. I don't entirely buy into this notion, Stephen, of the power of social media to move great swathes of votes, unless...
My goodness, Boris Johnson does, I'll tell you.
No, he may do that. He may think that, Stephen, but when you drill down into the evidence, it's limited. Certainly you can... A catchphrase can come along, or a video clip can go viral or something like that, but in terms of people going to polling stations, deciding to vote a particular way, it's more than just what they hear or see on social media.
Alex, I don't know. And well, I'll give you an example. When Boris Johnson, now clearly it didn't do him any harm ducking the Andrew Neil interview, but the audience for that programme would have been around about 1 million viewers. Andrew Neil's clip of Boris Johnson ducking him was seen by over 5 million people. That's the power of social media compared to the traditional broadcasters.
Yeah, but I suspect that Andrew hoped that, because they went to quite great lengths to try and get that message. Andrew probably thought he would almost embarrass Boris into coming into the studio with him. Boris didn't bother. Boris still managed to get the biggest election victory the Tories have had since 1987. So I sometimes think it's like the photograph. I remember the photograph of the young boy.
Yeah.
It was viral, Stephen. Everyone saying this is going to cost Johnson votes. I remember somebody even said, someone who I respect very much, who is a brilliant analyst based in London, said, this could be the difference between Boris Johnson getting a small majority and no majority. It had no impact at all, Stephen.
What about the other point that our caller Derek and Banger raised there, which is people in Northern Ireland are getting sick to the back teeth of orange and green? Is there anything in that?
I'm going to say no in one sense, Stephen, because if you add up the four, the UUP, the SDLP, Sinn Féin and the DUP, they're still taking something, 78-80% of the vote. The only way you can alliance, if they start breaking through, Stephen, into the 25-30%, then you can argue that there's maybe a change happening.
Is that not on the cards?
I don't know, because there's still, in 1998, the first Assembly election, I think the total number of people who voted for clearly Orange, Green, Unionist, Nationalist parties was about 85%. It's at 79-80% now. 21 years, it's only shifted 4%. It's closer to a breakthrough now than maybe it has ever been. And that's why, as Maria said, maybe if the Alliance would welcome an election in February. Because at some point, we keep being told this is people weren't voting Brexit, they were voting hospitals, they were voting schools, they were voting reform and so on. But come Monday morning when the Sinn Féin and the DUP sit down around that table and when the SDLP and the other parties join them, I'm not expecting any great sense of we must start working immediately. I think they will haggle and haggle and haggle. And I suspect, Stephen, they still won't get what they claim they want, which is a cooperative, you know, genuine power-sharing government.
Let's get a sense of Gregory Campbell's mindset. The DUP MP was returned for East Londonderry. He's been speaking to Radio Foyle's Una Kelly.
I think it's a mixed bag. I don't think you can say it's a bad election result for the DUP. We will bounce back from it. Our vote held up very well, as I say, up in North Down, my majority up here, and good results elsewhere.
In Westminster, the DUP no longer has quite as much sway now, with Boris Johnson having a larger majority.
Yes, that is right. Although, because Boris has an outright majority now, he will be able to drive through his Brexit agenda, and that's the numbers game in Westminster, so he'll be able to do that. But what we will be saying to him is, now that you've got us out of the European Union, you now need to cement and build up the United Kingdom Union. And that's what he must not go down in history as a Prime Minister who done more to destabilise the UK Union. He has to cement and build it.
Has the DUP destabilised the United Kingdom Union with their Brexit strategy?
No, and I speak as someone who voted for Brexit. As you know, I voted for Leave because I had very specific reasons, and reasons which I still have, Stephen. But I think in terms of what the DUP did once they made their confidence and supply arrangement with the British government, I think that they would probably, at the same time as doing that, they should also prioritise talking to the local parties here, talking to the Irish government, talking to Juncker and the European Union, maybe talking to Nicola Sturgeon, talking to the Welsh Assembly, trying to find a way where all the regional parties and parts of the United Kingdom could maybe reach some sort of joint agreement But they didn't do any of that. They just decided basically to ignore everyone. And I think the most crucial mistake they made, Stephen, was to put so much trust in Boris Johnson, particularly after someone like Theresa May, who is one of the most liberal, you know, understanding prime ministers I think we've ever had. If she, as they put it, betrayed them, they should have known that Boris Johnson could not be trusted.
And Gregory putting a brave face on it there, Maria, it's not that bad an election.
Oh, I mean, I don't know what figures Gregory is looking at. Maybe he's in a bubble. But like his own vote was close enough, just up slightly from what his vote in 2015 was. The DUP vote share overall is down by 5.4. I think that's significant enough. But when you add into the mix then the loss of Nigel Dodds in North Belfast, like the psychological blow of that is just horrendous for the DUP. And then you look at some of the other areas. I mean, they look to be down in almost every area going. But just to come back to Alex's point in terms of where it went wrong for the DUP, I think they backed themselves into a corner that they essentially couldn't get out of. They became quite cocky in some respects, particularly towards the end. And, you know, it was almost waving those 10 votes about like the this is the bargaining tool and it's us that will make the decision. And, you know, I was going to use bad language there, but almost disregard everybody else. And it just didn't work for them. They were talking to the Irish government. They've confirmed that. And they were talking across the board to other people. Where I think the problem for the DUP is, and it goes back to the deal over the Irish Language Act that they then walked away from, the DUP traditionally will come close to doing a deal and then they find out they have a problem because they're not actually talking to the loyalist community on the ground, the more hardline unionist community on the ground. They haven't actually prepared that ground and brought them with them. And I think they're going to have to find a way of riding those two horses at the one time. Alex, I don't know whether you agree with this or not, but I think it puts them in a really difficult position right at the crunch point whenever they're down to signing off on a whatever deal it is that they're doing, they then have to roll back from. Just to make the last point, that actually erodes trust then that people have, and they just end up giving people a stick to beat them with. You know,
I think what the DUP do sometimes is they talk to various loyalist groups, which is perfectly understandable, but they tell them, oh no, we won't back down, there'll be no concessions, knowing, as they always know in politics, particularly the power sharing government like Northern Ireland, that there always will be concessions. But I think, you know, when they do, I think there's still a tendency in elements of the DUP to look upon loyalism as some sort of lobby fodder. It'll come to their side. And I it does worry me slightly, Stephen, that the disconnect now between, I for want of a better term and no insult to anyone involved in it, a new generation loyalism. You know, which is...
What's that mean?
It means that they're people who were maybe 17, 18, younger when the Good Friday Agreement was voted for. And these are people who think there's no benefit. They don't see any benefit. They think they've been left behind. And I think the Democratic Unionist Party hasn't made any effort to sell it to them. But when it has to engage with them, it says, oh, we'll stop this. Don't worry. You can trust us. The problem, I think, for some elements of loyalism and unionism, their biggest problem is not Boris Johnson or Leo Varadkar. Sometimes their biggest problem, they have to face it, is the leadership, not just of the DUP, but of the leadership of unionism generally.
Fra in North Belfast. Morning, Fra.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, I just wanted to make the comment that I believe the fall in the vote for the DUP is really twofold. One of it is their aggressive policies that they've had for many, 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 many years. The other part is the huge Remain vote that you've seen with the Remain candidates. I think also that there is a disconnect with some of the political reality around austerity. So both the DUP and Sinn Féin, in my view, are seen by some members of the public who voted to be failing to deliver on the ground. So long as we have austerity, which now will be copper-fastened and doubled down with the huge majority that Boris Johnson now has. I mentioned before that when Jeremy Corbyn moved the British Labour Party from respecting the referendum result in 2016 to a second vote Remain party, that they would have huge difficulties. And what I see here now is just musical chairs. We've had a change of faces for some of the people representing some of the different constituencies, but the policies of austerity, which are going to be reinforced through the Boris Johnson government, are just going to hammer civil society. They're going to destroy the fabric of life here for the vulnerable and the poor and the marginalised. And the voting patterns that we've seen may be great for all the political pundits and for all your political commentators, but for people like me living in North Belfast on the ground, I don't believe I'll see any change.
So you don't see any change? You don't think much is going to change?
Absolutely not. Now, I know you're probably going to say, but hold on, there's John Finucane. There's the first Nationalist Republican MP in North Belfast since the birth of the state. I understand all that. There's a huge step forward for Alliance. I think part of the Alliance vote is a protest vote against the other parties. So if you put the Remain vote that went to Alliance, coupled with people who are feel disenfranchised and feel left behind and feel that the two main parties that they maybe voted for decades or for generations are feeling them, that that's part of the Alliance vote. But no, I don't see any change, because you bring back Stormont tomorrow, all I ever saw from Stormont was corruption, ineptitude and failure. Failure delivered not by Westminster but by our locally elected reps. And if you bring it back tomorrow, not only will you have more RHI, more NAMA, more Red Sky, more incompetence, you're going to have a reduced block grant.
Well, of course,
forward.
There's been no conclusion of corruption whatsoever, and you should wait for RHI to report before drawing any conclusions.
I accept that. That's my opinion, and I believe others may share it. But see, when it comes to the likes of the nurses that are on the picket lines, those people aren't going to get a pay raise. Those people aren't going to see any benefit of the election here in the north of Ireland, because we have a parochial regional assembly that has no real power except for dishing out the funds that they get through the block grant. And so long as that's reduced, and so long as the neoliberal austerity is the basis of the Tory government, nothing's going to change on the ground. And I don't care who gets elected and who claims to represent the wishes of the people. Well, I don't believe that they're in a position to deliver.
That is a really interesting point. Let me put it to you, Maria Cahill. With Sinn Féin not taking their seats and the DUP in a situation where Boris essentially walked away from them and told them to get stuffed, he would do his own thing anyway, what type of clout do our MPs have in Westminster? Are we just looked upon as poxy Northern Ireland and Boris will do whatever he wants to do, full stop?
Well, I think they have a lot less clout than what they had over the last number of years. But, I mean, MPs can do quite a lot of things they can once they're in. I mean, obviously, their votes do need to be counted. Even with huge majorities, there are issues in terms of local legislation. So, for example, the domestic violence legislation is due to be extended here. That will provide an opportunity for our MPs to actually row into that and, dare I say it, take the credit for having delivered it. You know, it will help them here locally. I think there's a separate point, though, around austerity and the health service, which Fra is making. And I think that's borne out. There is a frustration, and we always kind of look to places like West Belfast for the Sinn Féin vote. In West Belfast, that vote has gone down again by 12.9. Now, that's not to take away from the 20,800 votes that Paul Maskey got, but that, for me, that's a significant protest vote where people are moving away from there and towards people like People Before Profit, who are up 5%, 5.8%, A2 are up. So they have eaten in to that vote as well. And I think that has been a trend that people have missed over the last number of years, where the voting people in West Belfast are fed up with just voting the same thing over and over. That tells me that people are switched on to policies, and particularly to things like the crisis in the health service is absolutely horrendous here. No other party or parties would get away with sitting outside of a government with the health service the way it is at the minute, with the education sector the way that it is at
the
minute.
And I don't think people realise, despite how many times, and I hope I'm not sounding patronising here, despite how many times we tell them, it's maybe because people are too busy, they're distracted, whatever. But our waiting list figures are grotesquely out of kilter with the rest of the UK. There's a problem in the rest of the UK, Alex, but ours is off the scale worse. It would not be tolerated anywhere else.
It is off the scale worse. And it goes back to what Fra was saying, you know, he's saying about the MPs don't have power and the Assembly doesn't have power. Assembly does actually have power. It had great power. It had a block grant of 10 billion. It had other ways of investment and so on. And the one thing they never did, Stephen, was reach a collective agreement across all the parties, which all the ministers would stand over and dealing with health issues. They were never going to be able to.
Oh, well, now come on. No. Yes, they did with Bengoa. They got close, didn't they?
But they haven't implemented.
That's, but they come up with a consensus, Steve, and then didn't implement
Stephen,
it.
That's
clearly
my
worse.
No, Stephen, that's my point. There are a whole stack of consultation reports and recommendations, and every time there's a debate, whether it's education, oh well, somebody needs to implement that. Oh, health, somebody needs to implement Bingo. Oh, infrastructure, somebody needs to. Yeah. They have it there, Stephen. But when they sit down and somebody says you have to make a collective decision on this, which means Sinn Féin ministers, you stand over the programme for government, DUP, you stand over, you don't run silo, you don't prioritise your own policies, you prioritise all of Northern Ireland. And that has been the... And do you know, Stephen, and I don't often do optimism, if they actually got their act together, did a programme for government, limited it to a few things. Don't have 240 things they can't do. Limit it to maybe 50 things they can do. Do it together, do it collectively. I'm not saying park their constitutional beliefs. I'm simply saying, like I've said this to you before, cancer doesn't care what you are. You know, education isn't the priority for Protestant or isn't the privilege of a Protestant or Catholic. They can do this. They have that power. And the most positive message they could collectively send to the people of Northern Ireland is that whatever our positions on the constitutional question, we can actually make a difference to your health and to your education and to your jobs.
And it sounds really crass me saying it, and they don't like me saying it, and they will say, well, it's not one or the other. But at the end of the day, is saving someone from cancer by getting them diagnosed at an early stage more important than an Irish Language Act?
No, no question about it. I mean,
no, to them.
No, but I mean, I think this is the problem that there has been around this issue. Now, I am an Irish language speaker. You know, I learned it in secondary school. My sister actually presents a programme on Radio Ulster in the Irish language. So we are a family that have grown up, have the culture and all the rest of it. There is no way in this world that I would prioritise bringing in an Irish Language Act over health, over education, over any of those social issues.
Well, it's
and
in the Sinn Féin manifesto, Maria.
Absolutely, but that's
for,
a matter
for it to
for
be
them.
Credible, there must be an Irish Language Act.
Well, they'd be much for better concerning themselves. And I think where Alex is saying that it would be good for the politicians to send a positive message to the people, actually, the people have sent the politicians a message over the last 24 hours in terms of the results they've got. And that message to the politicians is get your act together. There is a lack of accountability in Stormont. It has been endemic over the last number of years. There have been votes that have been held up with a petition of concern. I think the parties got a taste of power and they let it go to their heads and it ran away with them. And they are now going to have to make themselves much more humble, and I think health gives them the fig leaf to go back in to do that. But and I think
much
that
more
that's
humble?
Where it is.
Do you think those two parties do humility? Those big parties do humility?
Well, they're going to have to. And I think the point around an Irish Language Act, I actually believe a deal was probably done weeks ago in terms of this issue, because you heard the mood music coming from both Michelle O'Neill and Arlene Foster in terms
well,
of saying,
if
we think this can get back up and running by Christmas.
But you see, if
just
that's
in the mouth
true,
of an election.
If that's true, Sinn Féin are still saying, must be an Irish Language Act, and Arlene Foster is still saying, there will not be an Irish Language Act. So if that's true, they're still backing themselves into a corner, Alex.
Well, and that's what worries me about come Monday, that it is a series. I know they all say we don't have red lines and so on, but there's clearly something that's stopping them. And Maria talks about humility. It's not, in essence, humility. It's empathy, Stephen. I really genuinely believe that there isn't one single MLA or one single potential minister or party leader who doesn't empathise when they hear about a child in a hospital, when they hear about somebody in a waiting list. But somehow, Stephen, they have to channel that empathy into some sort of ability to say, look, what is in the best interest of Northern Ireland right now? Not, you know, 5 years, 10 years, but right at this moment, if you stop 10 people or 100 people in the street and say, what matters to you most? I guarantee you, Stephen, 90% will say health.
Des is calling us from Scotland. Morning, Des.
Good morning, Stephen. Obviously, I'm delighted with the result here in Scotland, but my heart goes out to the people in Northern Ireland, because you don't have politicians who fight for you. You asked Naomi Long a question there about, you know, Boris Johnson can just say wave bye-bye. Of course he can. Because what's Northern Ireland going to be able to do in Westminster? Nothing. You know, you look at Scotland. We want independence, but they won't let us get a go. A go. We've asked it for umpteen times. They won't let us go. Why? Because we're too important. 1819 was 1.2 billion in oil, and that was a bad year. 1.2 billion went into the coffers of Westminster. The whiskey brings in over a million.
Well, if Boris Johnson's deal goes through, Des, Scotland is going to be at a relative disadvantage compared to Northern Ireland. Well, we will be able to trade certainly a lot more effortlessly with GB and new trade deals than you will.
Yes, I agree with you, and that's why I can't understand what all the fuss was about. We would take what you've got, but there again, we still want independence, because we have never voted a Conservative government in for the last 40 bloody years. You know?
Des, thank you. George Nixon, Hollywood. Morning, George.
Good morning, Stephen. That's 3 points, really. Stephen, now that the North has 9 nationalist MPs, is it time to set a 2 or 3 year future date for your new referendum? That's my first point.
Well, let's just take that point, because we're nearly at the news. Maria?
No, I think the vote actually has probably pushed that back a bit. If you look at the Colm Eastwood was much more nuanced when it came to a border poll. He's a majority of 17,000. Claire Hannah the same. The people who were pushing the border poll, the likes of Martina Anderson, Alicia McCallion, and those people who were out front and centre calling for it, you know, one has lost their seat, the other one was supporting her. So I don't think it has hastened that. And, you know, the only thing that I think that may bring it back into focus again is some type of citizens' convention.
With 50 seconds, Alex, is the union any more under threat today than it was before this result?
No, and it's no more under threat than it was in 1921. There are always crises for the union, but it's not that they're overcome easily, but it's not as easy to get out of the union as some people would like to think.